This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
New research presented at conferences in Victoria and Vancouver this month have highlighted several challenges related to HIV/AIDS prevention and treatment in the province of British Columbia. The findings are particularly important to the well-being of two groups that have often been described as particularly vulnerable to HIV infection, women and gay men. We're joined on the phone by Eric Berndt, Communications Coordinator for AIDS Vancouver Island. We'll also ask Eric about the Dining Out for Life fundraiser, which is planned for restaurants across Vancouver Island on Thursday, April 25th, 2013.
Welcome to People First Radio, Eric.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Eric, we're talking about two areas of current research today. The first one concerns HIV prevention among gay men. Olivier Ferlatte, a PhD candidate at Simon Fraser University, has found that while British Columbia's gay population is estimated to be roughly 2% of males, it is accounted for at least 40% of new HIV cases for each year for the last decade. Now, Olivier says that despite this disease burden, policies that might have supported interventions to prevent infections in gay men and men who have sex with men have fallen short, and health investments have failed to reflect the epidemiology of HIV in the region. Tell us more about that study and what the implications are for community-based work on Vancouver Island.
Yes, thank you, Kevin, and thank you for, you know, taking the time to actually talk about this issue. It's one that, you know, we don't get a lot of attention about, particularly we think because gay men are often stigmatized, and, you know, there is a lot of stigma out there related to sexual practices among gay men. And particularly this research is alarming to us. You know, we find that, and as you mentioned, there has been, over the last decade, a real steady and almost increasing level of new infection among gay men, not only in BC, but really across the Western world. And at the same time, we're finding that in the last year, about 9.7% of grant funding for HIV prevention in Canada has gone to this population, and so that's a real significant concern to us going forward and trying to really address the issues of gay men as it relates to HIV.
Now, this is a very interesting report. I've got it right in front of me, and the word intersectionality appears again and again. It's the method by which this individual studied this whole challenge. And I'm quoting from his paper in terms of intersectionality. Mm-hmm. It refers to an approach that assists in documenting how multiple forms of oppression affect identities and opportunities of specific groups or individuals. Give us a sense of what those multiple forms of oppression might be and how they, I guess you might say, how they intersect to create this situation.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really important that we do start to frame this discussion in terms of intersectionality, and that there really are, there's an intersection of inequality sometimes facing gay men, and particularly when we think about race and class and ethnicity, et cetera, that we really find that that those really coalesce and come together to create a lot of stigma that not only prevents gay men from protecting themselves and finding the right tools to stay healthy, but also on a more systemic and societal level, we find that there isn't a lot of attention being paid to this population in the research. I will add too, Kevin, that you know, I think historically within within academies and within universities, sexuality research in general is really marginalized and really stigmatized, and so we find when it comes to HIV, which is a sexually transmitted infection, that finding research and doing research that is really effective in developing prevention interventions is missing.
Do you think that there are assumptions that have been in place for some time that the, in terms of HIV prevention and work, that the gay population has sort of, quote-unquote, been taken care of a long time ago?
Yeah, and you know, I think that that also stems from, fortunately and unfortunately, from some of the antiretroviral therapies that came into effect in the late 90s and that started to, you know, gay men who were living with HIV started to live longer lives, and now it's no longer really necessarily a death sentence. And so a whole younger generation of young gay men are not seeing their friends and loved ones die anymore from the illness, and so they're not as concerned. I was actually just reading a study today that said overall Canadians' knowledge of HIV is going down, and their stigma, the stigma and the misbelief, the misperception about it is going up, and so that for us is a real concern. You know, what we try to do with our men's wellness program is really try to create community, because we know that a lot of the issue is about isolation as well, and a lot of gay men are feeling more and more isolated, and so we're trying to really develop programs that bring men out from the community and have a safe space for them to meet.
Now, the second area of new research that I'd like to ask you about
Sure.
concerns women and mm-hmm. inequality of care. Now, two new studies from the British Columbia Center for Excellence in HIV and AIDS have demonstrated that barriers undermining women's access to HIV treatment and care must be addressed in order to reduce morbidity and mortality among HIV-positive women and to reduce HIV transmission. Tell us more about the challenges faced by women with HIV and the implications of this particular research.
Yeah, you know, in preparing for this interview, it's really interesting because I think, you know, HIV is such a, is a disease where if you really want to understand the inequalities that exist in society, looking at HIV is a really eye-opening and revealing illness, because it really does bring out a lot of these inequalities. And, you know, we're definitely concerned about, again, these reports that indicate that women are not getting the treatment that is available because healthcare providers potentially are not seeing the need for health, women-centered health. And really what that shows us, Kevin, is that we need to do a little bit more work and work a little harder to educate service providers and healthcare providers about what the specific needs of women are when it comes to HIV and AIDS.
There seems to be, of course, an implication in describing these research studies as demonstrating inequalities in care for women. The suggestion would be, does that mean that the men are getting all the care?
Well, some research does indicate that when it comes to clinical trials, for example, a large majority of the research cases are among men. So it's a very difficult position. We at AIDS Vancouver Island are involved with a study with the Canadian HIV Women's Sexual and Reproductive Health Study that's looking at some of those inequalities within the system and really trying to understand how we can help to ameliorate them. And you know, we know that women's experiences are unique when it comes to HIV. Women are, by and large, generally more likely to be responsible for childcare, et cetera. And so often their own health needs are put last often. And so we're really trying to determine how we can fix that. One of the things in that study that was really interesting from our perspective was the geographical setting and the lack of trust in healthcare providers. And, you know, Vancouver Island is mostly rural and remote and in many cases. And so what we've been able to do in the last 2 years through the Stop HIV project is to bring HIV care specialists to Nanaimo, to Courtney and Campbell River on a monthly basis, just so that people don't have to travel to Vancouver. So even just getting a specialist in those regions has meant the world, really, to people living with HIV on Vancouver Island.
I'd like to turn to an upcoming event that is not only very popular among Vancouver Island diners, but also important to AIDS Vancouver Island in terms of awareness raising and fundraising, and that's Dining Out for Life. It returns for its 8th year at participating restaurants across Vancouver Island. The event happens on Thursday, April 25th, 2013, and over 70 Vancouver Island restaurants will help out, maybe more, including the Thirsty Camel in downtown Nanaimo. I spoke yesterday with Lanelle and Elan, and here is some of what they had to say.
Elan started the Thirsty Camel because he wanted to create a community space where there was healthy food being served and a place for conscious discussion. You know, he's a really political person, so I think that was a big motivation for him in creating the Thirsty Camel. And I love doing it because I love interacting with people and serving them good food. I think it's really important. Whenever anyone asks me what my hobbies are, I always just say dinner.
For one thing, to raise awareness about HIV/AIDS and about people infected with HIV/AIDS and the dangers of the people not infected with HIV/AIDS and the dangers of infection. And for another thing, is just to help people. Just to, you know, there aren't enough resources out there for people with all kinds of different diseases. And anything that within you know, anything that's in my power within reason that I can afford to do to assist people, especially people with such a stigmatized disease, have a bit of a better life or have more support, I'm happy to do.
Eric Burnt, tell us more about Dining Out for Life.
Well, that, what a beautiful clip. Thank you for playing that. That really epitomizes a lot of the restaurateurs that we have on board with us for Dining Out for Life. Dining Out for Life is a very simple way to support AIDS Vancouver Island and to support charity. You know, often we think of fundraising events as being walks or something where you have to move. Well, Dining Out for Life is really about eating, and you can eat and support charity, which a lot of people relate to and really find appealing. And so on April 25th, we have over, right now we have almost 90 participating restaurants who are willing to donate 25% of their food sales to our organization. We also, that day, will be handing out donation cards within the restaurants to encourage donations. And so all people have to do is go to one of those restaurants, order their favorite meals, tip their servers generously, and also make a small donation if they can to support our organization.
How does the event benefit people living with HIV and AIDS on Vancouver Island?
Well, one of the things that's really unique about the event for us is that, first of all, AIDS Vancouver Island has 5 offices across the island from Victoria all the way up to Port Hardy. We also have an office in Nanaimo, Courtney, and Campbell River. And for the majority of our programs, we actually are able to provide food to people who are living with HIV in need. And so, for example, in Victoria, we have served over 10,000 meals last year to people who are living with HIV and who are in need of that support. So by eating out, you're actually helping people to get a nutritious meal.
How can people participate in their local communities? You said go out and buy a meal. Is there another way that people can participate? You mentioned 5 offices across Vancouver Island. What else can people do to help out?
Well, throughout the year, not just specifically Dining Out for Life, there's many ways of getting involved, but specifically around this fundraising event, of course, you can visit our website. We really encourage people to use this opportunity where there's a bit more media to really get educated as well about the issues related to HIV and AIDS, and also make a donation on our website if you can, or support people who you may know in your community who might be struggling.
I also spoke with Robbie, who works at Shelter Restaurant in Tofino. Here's what he had to say.
My name is Robbie, and I am from Shelter Restaurant in Tofino. AIDS Vancouver Island is a cause that's very, very important to our owner, Jay Gildenheist. He's been working in cahoots with them for about 10 years now since Shelter opened, and he actually worked with them with other restaurants that he has worked at. As an organization, AIDS Vancouver Island, they're an extremely professional group of people, very organized, which makes our end of the bargain very, very easy. They allow us as Tofitians to really utilize a lot of local resources and really work together as such a small community to reach a common goal on a much greater scale. Shelter's a community-oriented restaurant that loves to cater to not only tourists but our locals as well, which they really allow us to do. If we can do that while helping such a great cause, I think it's really a win for everybody. Really, that's what the event is all about. AIDS Vancouver Island started in 85 as a small office space with no paid staff and just funding from benefits and charity organizations. And in 2012 alone, 70 restaurants produced over $35,000 in donations in one day. This year, we have 80 restaurants involved altogether for Dining Out for Life, which is just amazing. And Shelter, we're really just honored to be a part of such an amazing awareness fundraiser and glad to be able to cook our food and make such an impact for them.
Eric, in the last moment here, I'm wondering, for the sake of listeners who may have just joined us, give us a sense of what the basic information is, the need to know for participating in Dining Out for Life.
Absolutely. April 25th, go to our website, diningoutforlife.com, and click on the Vancouver Island link or wherever you are in the world, or wherever you are in North America, rather, and choose a restaurant and go and have a delicious meal where 25% of your food bill will be donated to AIDS Vancouver Island to help people who are living with HIV in your community.
And I went and took a look at that Dining Out for Life on Vancouver Island list. It's very complete. It gives the contact information and everything you need to know to even get there and enjoy your meal. Thanks very much, Eric, for taking the time to join us.
Thanks so much, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Eric Berndt is Communications Coordinator at AIDS Vancouver Island. You can find them online at avi.org. For more information about Dining Out for Life, go to avi.org or search online for Dining Out for Life, Vancouver Island.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.